The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Nick Watt, and welcome back to Politics Weekly after the Easter break. Well, it's been quite a week after Gordon Brown was forced into his first major U-turn as Prime Minister. After insisting that nobody would lose out from the abolition of the 10p starting rate of tax, the Prime Minister admitted that perhaps a few people had suffered and they would be given help. David Cameron was scathing.
It is always about politics, not about policy. Yeah. It's always about calculation, yeah. Not about conviction. Yeah. It's always about his self-interest, not the national interest. Yeah. Does this Prime Minister think his reputation can ever recover?
Yeah. We'll be asking where the 10p climb down leaves the Prime Minister. We'll also be looking forward to next week's local elections in England and Wales and to the riveting Ken and Boris show in the London mayoral contest. We'll also cast our eyes across the Atlantic and ask whether the Democrats are any closer to choosing their candidate for the White House after Hillary Clinton's victory in the Pennsylvania primary. Joining me to discuss these matters are three fine political minds. We have David Lammy, the skills minister, who is perhaps better known at the moment as one of Barack Obama's greatest admirers in Britain. Hello, David.
Hi.
We have Catherine Bennett, the Observer columnist. Hello, Catherine.
Hi.
And finally, we are joined for the first time on Politics Weekly by the veteran Guardian columnist, Seamus Milne. Hello, Seamus.
Thank you, Nick.
I should say that Seamus has been around for a few years, but he doesn't look a day over 30. Well, we asked Simon Hoggett, the Guardian's parliamentary sketchwriter, to describe the scenes when Gordon Brown announced that U-turn on the 10p rate at Prime Minister's Questions on Wednesday. The Prime Minister appeared in the Commons minutes after the Chancellor, Alastair Darling, had announced a compensation package for some of the 5.3 million people who've been left worse off by the tax changes.
Well, the Prime Minister's faced yet another absolutely terrible week. The 10p row, the abolition of the 10 pence band of income tax, really threatened to bring him down. On Monday, there was a real possibility that he'd lose, and that would have been put him in a very tricky position. So what he's done is he's backed down. He said there will be lots of help, and help very fast for people who really need it, pensioners, the poor, single-parent families, and so on. But he had to announce that at Prime Minister's Questions.
Questions to the Prime Minister.
And, of course, that is the bear pit, the bullring, the place where he's going to have the roughest possible time, and by golly, he got a rough time. He announced what they were planning to do in response to a slavish question from a Labour MP, and then David Cameron moved in. He'd been expecting this. He'd prepared for it. This session should be renamed Prime Minister's U-turns, he said. Massive loss of authority by the Prime Minister, a panic concession. They told us they couldn't rewrite the budget. They have. They told us they couldn't climb down. Gordon Brown tried to fight back.
For some time that we want to do more to help people on low income.
His two main points were, well, the 10p rate didn't really help poor people. It didn't target poor people because everybody benefited. Therefore, it targeted well-to-do people as well. And he also said, implied that the Tories are quite happy to see people living in terrible slum conditions because they were the uncaring party.
Does the Prime Minister have any idea what a pathetic figure he cuts today?
Didn't do much good. David Cameron called him a pathetic figure. He comes to the House today having done a U-turn. And it's just like the general election, which he cancelled even though he believed he was going to win it, said Mr. Cameron with scarcely disguised sarcasm. Gordon Brown kept repeating, the 10p rate is not the best way to help poor people. Cameron didn't care. Will his reputation ever recover? It was getting worse.
Was there ever anything more humiliating than a Prime Minister breaking off his talks with the President, asking for an outside line in the White House to beg with one of his PPSs not to resign?
I like that touch of the, hello, can I have an outside line, please? In order to beg a parliamentary aide not to resign. That was last week. Well, I suspect Gordon Brown will think he didn't do too badly, but he'll be pretty well alone in that. It really sounded and looked and felt very bad indeed.
That was Simon Hoggett. David Lammy, as a Minister of the Crown, it is my solemn duty to present you with the case for the prosecution. Gordon Brown was forced to perform a humiliating U-turn, and he didn't carry it off very well, did he?
Look, I think that it's important to remember that Gordon Brown's absolute signature is his commitment to poverty. And actually, the budget in which these changes were made, the fundamental thing he was trying to do was support poor families, to support children particularly. Now, it's subsequently that the detail of that has particularly affected those under 25 without children and those just beneath the pension threshold of 60 to 64. That has caused concern amongst backbench MPs. And I have to say, representing a seat like mine, second poorest in London, it is something that has been rumbling and that has caused concern. I actually think he was right to listen, to respond, to deal with this and to move on. And I don't think in the months ahead, people will be talking about a U-turn. They'll actually be reflecting that he responded to concern and remembering in the end that if you look across the range of policies over the last 10 years, Gordon Brown has been at the centre of alleviating child poverty, and that was his principal concern.
I mean, it's interesting, Catherine Bennett, isn't it? There's David Lammy saying that social justice is Gordon Brown's signature issue, and yet he got into terrible trouble on helping the poorest people in society. What went wrong?
I don't know. I mean, I think they must be just much stupider than one thinks they actually are. I don't know. I mean, it's obviously a total mistake at some point. But I do think that listening to David Cameron, you do think, well, he's not... I always actually, when I hear him sort of going for Brown, I always side with Brown and feel sorry for him and think that, you know, he's just being sort of baited, because there isn't any politics in that baiting either, is there? And I think that Brown, in a way, I mean, at least he shows he can sort of change his mind and sort of try to put things right, however fumblingly. And I just think he sounds like Dobbin in Vanity Fair or something, baited by horrible posh boys, and I immediately warm to him.
Seamus, let me ask you, you wrote in The Guardian on Thursday that this was a humiliating U-turn for Gordon Brown, but that the decision was a victory for social justice. Do you see this as a change moment for this government and this Prime Minister?
Well, I think it is very positive in that way, in the sense that, first of all, you know, Labour MPs have shown themselves able to change direction on behalf of the, you know, the people that they are elected to represent. And I mean, it was, the original decision was a very bad decision, which was trying to wrongfoot the Tories and appeal to a certain kind of middle income voter at the expense of, you know, some of the poorest people in the country. And so it's good that that's been reversed to the extent that it has. And it's good that that's happened through Parliament, through, you know, Labour MPs standing up to the government. And it's the first time that the government has U-turned on behalf of the people it's elected to represent, rather than the City of London and the CBI, as we saw in the cases like the, you know, capital gains tax and non-dom twists and turns. So I think it's positive in that way. And if it becomes, I mean, if the government starts to take notice of its own supporters and core voters more, I think that's a positive sign. Obviously, there is a downside in the sense that Brown's authority, which was already very low, has sunk lower as he's been seen to have to respond to, you know, quite intense political pressure in Parliament. But, you know, how that plays out, we'll see next week with the local elections, I think we're going to discuss later.
David, it's interesting, Seamus was saying there that the problem for this originated from Gordon Brown trying to wrongfoot the Tories, which was in his last budget in March 2007. He announced that great headlining grabbing cut in the basic rate of tax from 22p to 20p. Didn't mention it at the time, but it was in the Red Book that the way they were going to pay for that was the abolition of the 10p rate. Doesn't that show a wider problem with Gordon Brown, which is that he looks at tactics, doesn't think strategically?
No, I don't accept that. Look, he made the cut, and actually the 10p tax was known. It was to specifically get money to people on low incomes, but overwhelmingly parents with children. That was the specific policy decision. And at the time, there was a big debate about families, about children, and about poverty. That's what preceded the budget. That's what he sought to do. Subsequently, Labour MPs have got concerned about those that missed out in that story. And I think it's right to say that the 10p tax became totemic for those on low incomes. And now, I think Gordon was right to respond and to respond quickly. And you contrast that with politicians of different colours over the years that have stood their ground, that have not listened to what MPs are picking up on the doorstep, that have held firm and in the end lost their way or indeed lost power. He's moved quickly to deal with this. And people will look at this in the round. They will remember that he introduced the tax credit. They will remember that he's the man committed to ending child poverty, not just in this country, but overseas. And they will remember in the end that it's him in his successive budgets that have given us the funds to make these changes in the first place.
So, Catherine, David Lammy's saying there that this is a Prime Minister who listens. But do you think this looks like a government that's losing control? I mean, on Thursday, very serious strike by teachers from the NUJ closing closing a lot of schools in England and Wales. Very serious problems with public sector strikes. Doesn't look good. We're back to the dark days, aren't we?
I don't think the strikes are sort of will cause that impression yet. I mean, I think a lot of people, even those who are inconvenienced by the strike in schools, actually have quite a lot of sympathy for the teachers. So, I mean, I think that feels like talking it out, really. I think the main thing now is that to sort out this 10p thing, because it's still today not at all clear that everyone is going to be recompensed and there are still going to be losers. And I think if they leave people losing out still, then that will be really bad and that will be muddly and unclear, and that's worse than the strikes, seems to me.
So, David Lammy, you're the skills minister. How do you feel about paying vital civil servants £12,000 to £13,000 a year and then giving them a below inflation pay increase?
Look, I mean, I came into politics to help those on low incomes, and that's the subject of the debates this week right across the piece. But I also accept that what has unravelled Labour governments in the past is not having a handle on expenditure, caving into pressure sometimes from our colleagues and friends in the unions, and therefore not having the platform to do the sorts of things I came into politics to do for my constituents. So as tough as it is, I accept that the Chancellor has to be clear on what he can and can't do whenever we come to a spending around. Now, that affects civil servants, that affects teachers, doctors, nurses, all of us who work in the public sector. The only people it doesn't affect, of course, are Guardian journalists.
I'm not asking anyone to vote for me because of what we've done in the last 8 years. It's about what we'll do in the next four. We've got Crossrail, £16 billion project. If a mayor gets that wrong, you can bankrupt the city. We're setting a new agenda on climate change. Other cities around the world collaborating with us. Whole series of new initiatives on lighting and on building retrofits, but also on affordable housing. Clear choice.
Yes, that was Ken Livingstone outlining the reasons why he should be given a third term as London mayor next week. Well, Gordon Brown faces his first major electoral test since becoming Prime Minister next Thursday. There are local council elections in England and Wales and, of course, the London mayoral contest between Ken Livingstone and Boris Johnson. Seamus, you have written a piece in The Guardian, I think today, Thursday, saying that Boris Johnson is an unreconstructed Thatcherite. Tell us why Seamus Milne is supporting Ken Livingstone.
Well, of course, it's not just Seamus Milne. I mean, it's, a vast swathe of opinion. I mean, what has happened in the last few months is there has been the most savage and unreconstructed campaign by the Evening Standard in particular, but other wider sections of the press against Livingstone and in support of Boris Johnson. And although there are some serious stories that have come up in that and issues that have come up, overwhelmingly it's a straightforward smear campaign which reached its absolute nadir last Thursday, I think it was, with the banner headline on the front page of the Evening Standard saying "Suicide Bomber Runs Ken Campaign." I mean, which is just a load of complete tosh at every level. But I think this is a very serious election for the future direction of British politics. I mean, you've got Ken Livingstone, you know, for all his faults, represents an attempt to construct a progressive coalition in London and more widely, which stretches beyond traditional Labour supporters and has been pretty effective in that. You know, within his powers, he has been redistributive. He has been innovative with congestion charge and other, you know, environmentally friendly policies. And I think, you know, as was shown after the bomb attacks in 2005, he was very effective at holding London together. That just simply is not going to be the case if Boris Johnson were to be successful next Thursday. This is a guy who regards Islam as the problem, who thinks that it's a vicious sectarian religion and that Islamophobia is very understandable, who thinks it's okay to refer to black people as pickaninnies. This is a guy who's going to represent the most successful multicultural city in the world. This is a very serious contest.
OK, now, interestingly, David Lammy, who is the Labour MP for Tottenham, was agreeing and nodding with a lot of what Seamus said. But before I come on to the MP for Tottenham, let me ask Catherine. Seamus was saying that the Evening Standard have run a vicious and unfair campaign against Ken Livingstone. But doesn't the Standard have a point, which is that Ken Livingstone has been around for 8 years? He wants another 4 years. He's surrounded himself with quite a small clique of people who seem to be behaving in what some might say is quite a questionable, closed way.
I agree. I mean, I think I don't think Ken should get another term. You know, he said he wouldn't go for one a few years ago. He said all kinds of things, which he's now reversed. I think he's damaged goods. I think he associates with people with appalling views, you know, homophobic views, women, people who think women are second-class citizens. And I just don't think that's acceptable. I think it is time that someone else had a go. On the other hand, I agree also that Boris is utterly unimpressive. I think the whole contest is absolutely unbelievably depressing. The quality of the policies, the debate, the standard of argument and rhetoric is deplorable considering its kind of meta importance. I mean, one indication of just how hopeless the whole thing is. I mean, I live in London. I haven't had one single piece of campaign literature from any single candidate, not one of them. I get pizza stuff, I get, you know, everything else that can come through a door practically, but nothing from all these terribly important candidates.
So, David Lammy, let me ask you. Catherine Bennett is saying that Ken's been around really for too long. Time for a change.
Look, I think that was a decision for the individual parties. He chose to stand again and he was not contested. And I think he was not contested because, you know, when people reflect, if you like, on the big characters of the Labour movement over the last period, there's no doubt about it. Ken Livingstone is one of them. He's a politician, yes, that you either absolutely love or you detest, but his record is absolutely clear. And London's was in a shambles. The tube was not running successfully. There was huge congestion. We'd not begun a serious debate about climate change in this city. Pensioners were afraid to go on the buses. There were real pressures in inner city areas like mine. Ken has solved. Crime is down in London. It really is down. That doesn't mean there aren't problems, but it is down in London. And much of that credit should go to Ken Livingstone. Now, yes, he has to have a future platform. And there are issues, particularly around knife crime, that we need to deal with over the course of the coming months when he wins. But Boris Johnson, the suggestion, what was it, a few weeks ago, that he's down with the ethnics. Well, he's not down with me. We need a mayor that can speak for the whole of London, that is at ease with London's multi-ethnicity. Boris just cannot do that at a time when we're facing real issues of security and also at a time with financial and economic problems when you need someone who can mix it, if you like, with the city as well as with those who are struggling in difficult economic times.
When you say that Boris Johnson is not down with the ethnics, one of the...
He says
he's not down with the ethnic. That he's down with the ethnic. That one of the issues that's held up is an article that he wrote in the Daily Telegraph a few years ago, which referred to black people as pickaninnies. What the Boris Johnson team would say is that he was mocking Tony Blair. He wasn't attacking black people as pickaninnies. Do you think that he was grossly insensitive and grossly racist, or do you think he just was unfortunate use of language by a Daily Telegraph journalist?
I think in order to be mayor of London, there is a certain threshold that has to be crossed, which is the ability to be at ease with the many, many people from all over the world that make up London's population. It's a threshold that Boris simply does not cross. It's clear on the things that he said in the past, including that statement. I don't really care what his motivation is for that, whether he's a racist or whatever. What I do care about is he doesn't cross the threshold. He can't unite London. And, you know, it's capable of all cities to drift off into their separate silos. That's not the kind of London that I want. Ken is someone who can build coalitions, vast coalitions, very, very different across different parts of London. He is capable of doing that. He demonstrated that at the last election and the election before that. He wants to stand again. I'm convinced that there's much to do in London that he can do it. And that's why he's got my full support.
Can I just ask you finally, David, on the London mayoral contest, doesn't the Evening Standard have a point, which is that Ken Livingstone has surrounded himself with a clique of advisers? He gave very strong defence for Lee Jasper, said he'd done nothing wrong, and then Lee Jasper resigned. It doesn't look good, does it?
all politicians surround themselves with a clique of advisers to help them do the job. Those are people that they trust, often that they've known for many years, and Ken is no different to the rest of us. What you judge the politician on is the policy platform, what they're delivering for the people, and that is what will matter in the election, not who his advisers are and, you know, what emails they've sent and all the rest of it.
It's a long road to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and it runs right through the heart of Pennsylvania.
Yes, that was Hillary Clinton as she stormed back into the race for the White House on Tuesday after winning the Pennsylvania Democratic primary by 10 points. Despite her victory, the Obama crowd are saying Clinton should bow out now because she will never win enough delegates to secure the nomination. People in Hillary land are saying no way because she keeps on winning the big states the Democrats need to scoop up if they are to make it back to the White House. Catherine, is Hillary Clinton still a serious contender?
Well, I think after Pennsylvania, I suppose you have to accept she must be. And it's just so scary. I think the more horrible she becomes, the more successful she seems to be. And it makes me really wonder about American women. I think I don't know what they can be like. I mean, the fact she gets, she has this huge power base among women when she's actually the reverse of a kind of, you know, feminist candidate. She's only there because of her husband. And, you know, she has no qualities which one would associate with the best parts of being a woman. I just don't understand why they like her so much. But, yeah, she's serious, isn't she?
So, Seamus, Catherine is not a great fan of Hillary Clinton's. Do you think she should bow out? And do you think the prolonged Democratic contest is damaging that party?
Well, it's a big worry, isn't it, for everybody, not just in America, but throughout the world, you know, what happens in this contest. And it's a big worry if, you know, from the progressive side of politics, if the two Democratic candidates, you know, slug it out for such a long time and so effectively that it ends up with a McCain victory and a guy who wants to intensify the Iraq war and the kind of policies that George Bush has, you know, imposed on the world to such a disastrous way. So, I mean, I think from the point of view of most Americans and most people in the rest of the world, it would be better if this contest were settled quickly, so that a Democratic candidate who can represent a more moderate approach to international policy in particular could be in place and stand the best chance of defeating McCain. But, I mean, you've got to hand it to Hillary Clinton. I mean, it's unbelievable staying power given what's taken place. And, I mean, it's also a fact, and this is the worrying thing, I think, from the point of view of the Obama campaign, is that, you know, she obviously is able to mobilize white working class voters in particular in states like Pennsylvania in a way that he's been less successful at, although he's come forward incredibly strongly. But I think, you know, from the point of view of the rest of us, an Obama victory would not only be a fantastic development, but also is necessary, and it's necessary quickly.
So, David Lammy, you're a big Barack Obama fan. Seamus Milne says that Hillary Clinton has great staying power, but that Barack Obama would be fantastic as president. Presumably you'd quite like to see Hillary Clinton bow out.
Well, you know that I've got to heavily caveat anything that I say. Ministers don't interfere in foreign elections, and indeed we wouldn't want them to interfere in ours. Look, the Democrats are lucky and fortunate to have a field of two incredibly strong candidates. Yes, I know Barack Obama, and I believe he could make an incredible president. He's a charismatic guy, very intelligent. I think he has an excellent policy platform. There are many similarities between what he's proposing and indeed what Hillary is proposing. And I think that we tend to concentrate on the fact that he is black and she is a woman. Actually, if you look at all three candidates, including John McCain, what's interesting is that they are outsiders. John McCain, as a war veteran, taking very uncomfortable positions within the Republican Party and making his way to the nomination. Barack Obama, new on the scene, mixed race, and Hillary Clinton as a woman. They are outsiders, in a sense, campaigning to get in. I think that that's what's interesting. They all have a base, a very obvious base within the country. And I think that that is refreshing for American politics. And, you know, obviously, we look to see what the conclusion is. It's not surprising that I, as a Labour MP, am sympathetic to the Democrats.
Now, Seamus was saying that this presidential election, as with all US presidential elections, matters way beyond the United States. It matters around the world. Last week in Washington, Gordon Brown met the three candidates, the three presidential candidates. The most significant of those meetings was obviously with Barack Obama, because the Prime Minister has met Hillary Clinton, met John McCain before. How do you think the meeting with Barack Obama went?
Well, Gordon is the kind of politician that's able to establish common ground, I think, across a broad base. And he was able to talk about foreign policy with John McCain, climate change and international institutions with both Hillary and Barack Obama. He was absolutely clear that all of those meetings should be 45 minutes, fair to each of those candidates. Britain will work with whoever becomes the next American president. This is not just obviously about Gordon Brown. It's about our Foreign Office and many of our advisors. And I know that they have been speaking to people right across the various campaigns. So whoever becomes president in November and takes that position in January 2009, Britain will work with them and Gordon will work with them.
Well, that's it from this week's edition of Politics Weekly. Thanks to all my guests, the Skills Minister David Lammy, the Observer columnist Catherine Bennett, and the Guardian columnist Seamus Milne. Politics Weekly was produced by Francesca Panetta. I'm Nick Watt. Join us again next week. Till then, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.